Charlie. What's your ETA? I'll be there in 15 mins.
Me. I'm not coming tonight.
Logan. Fuck that. Get your ass over here.
Charlie.
The Lord Commander has spoken. Get your ass over here.
Me. I'm not fit for public viewing.
Logan. What does that even mean?
Charlie.
It means he's crying like a little girl. Dude, this is pathetic. Throw on some clothes and get over here.
Me. You guys sure know how to make me feel better.
Charlie.
We aren't trying to make you feel better. We just want to get you drunk and laid.
Me. Not happening.
Logan. If you aren't at O'Malley's in 15 minutes, we're coming to your house.
Charlie.
And I may decide to bring strippers over. Because I'm a good friend.
Me. You can't make me open the door.
Charlie.
I have a spare key, remember?
Fucking hell.
The last thing I want to do tonight is meet up with the guys for happy hour. My plans included sleeping, maybe watching a horror movie, and maybe I'd get a little crazy and order a pizza. I definitely do not want to shower, change, and go out. But I also don't want to call Charlie's bluff. History has proven that he does not bluff. He's likely to actually show up with strippers. And I'm in no mood to deal with his shenanigans. I look around my bedroom at the mess that is collected. It has been 6 days since I ended things. 6 days of working with her and treating her like any other coworker. 6 days since I touched her. 6 days of questioning my sanity. Is it really that big of a deal to hide our relationship at work? I want to call her and tell her I was wrong, tell her it's not that important to me. But then I remember that she didn't even want to introduce me to her dad as her boyfriend. I was a co-worker, and that feeling sucked. Which brings me back to my miserable, smelly self. Without needing to go to work today, there was no reason to shower or get out of my sweats, for that matter. Dirty dishes are piled up in the sink and on the kitchen table. This place needs some attention, but I have zero motivation to clean up. I decide that a beer and a burger from O'Malley's doesn't sound half bad. Me. Don't come here, I'll be there in 30.
Logan.
We'll have alcohol waiting.
30 minutes later, after showering and putting on clean clothes, I walk into O'Malley's and Shirley points me to the back table.
Look who decided to grace us with his presence,
Charlie comments as I take a seat at the table. Fuck you. I'm in no mood for their shit tonight. And he's especially grumpy, Logan observes. Look, I would have rather stayed home tonight, but you guys wanted me to come out, so don't say I didn't try to avoid subjecting you to my bad attitude. The pitcher of beer calls my name, so I grab it and start to pour myself a glass.
Wow, you look like shit,
Charlie says bluntly.
Thank you, asshole.
Drink up, buddy, I'm paying tonight.
Why, because you pity me?
Will you punch me if I say yes?
Maybe.
I drain my glass in 5 seconds, then hold it out for a refill. Logan signals to the bartender to bring us another pitcher of beer.
You want food, too, or just alcohol poisoning?
Food, too. If I get alcohol poisoning, I'll have to go to the ER, and it would be just my luck that Monica would have to deal with me and see what a pathetic mess I am.
Shirley, can you bring Max a burger and fries?
Logan calls out to her.
No problem, sweetheart,
Shirley hollers back. I take a few sips of my second beer and set it down in front of me. The beer is still cold, and I stare at the condensation on the glass as if it is fascinating. Both Charlie and Logan are staring at me, but I really don't want to talk about it. What is there to say, anyway? I found love, it was amazing, and I lost it. Life was wonderful for a little while, and now it sucks. End of story.
I take it there's trouble in paradise?
Charlie points out the obvious.
You really want to talk about my feelings?
I raise an eyebrow at him.
Not particularly, he replies honestly. But I am wondering what the fuck happened. You guys were all lovey-dovey the last time I saw you.
How did you go from relationship road to dumpster avenue? She wanted to hide our relationship at work. I'm sure Tate told you about the fundraiser. I look at Logan for confirmation, and he nods. Charlie glances at Logan, leans toward him, and does a bad job of whispering,
I forget. Am I not supposed to know about that?
Logan just shrugs. It's fine if you know. I just can't deal with hiding. It makes me feel like she was slumming it with me, you know? We would have never worked anyway. She comes from money, and you know where I come from. I start drinking again to shut myself up. She'd be hard-pressed to find a better man than you, my friend, Logan says sincerely. And fuck, that makes my eyes burn. Can someone please change the subject?
Did you at least get to play doctor?
Charlie asks. Tact is his middle name. Dude, come on. Logan stares at Charlie, trying to communicate silently.
What?
You know you were wondering the same thing. He turns to look at me.
You banged her in the Porsche, right? Tell me you did not let that opportunity pass you up.
Thoughts of that night come flooding back to me. The silver necklace, her perfect nipples, the way she bounced on top of me. The sex was amazing that night, but it was amazing after the sex, too. The way she melted against me, boneless and sated. Then, when we finally made it out of the car and into my apartment building, she'd blushed every time anyone looked at us, as if they could tell what we just did.
Damn, you totally banged her in the Porsche. I wish I could read your mind right now. I bet it was hot, right?
How is this helping, you idiot? Logan throws a peanut at Charlie. Have you seen her at work? He asks me. I sigh. Yes, and it sucks just as much as you think it does. That's the problem with dating a coworker. You can't escape them if it ends, Logan says, helpfully stating the obvious.
A wise man once said, don't shit where you eat.
Charlie quotes Logan's advice from the beginning of all this. I stare at him. That wasn't your advice. You told me I should go for it.
Who said I was wise? You know you should never listen to me.
I'm going to the bathroom. When I get back, can we please talk about something else? I go to the bathroom and take my time. If I wasn't depressed before, I sure am now, along with slightly tipsy. 2 beers in 5 minutes on an empty stomach is a recipe to get very drunk. If only drunk meant I could forget Monica for a little while. When I get back to the table, my burger and fries are waiting for me, and I dig in. Charlie and Logan are silent as they watch me eat. So, Logan starts.
So,
Charlie adds helpfully. Even that two-letter word reminds me of Monica.
Do you guys have to talk?
I grumble.
Man, he really is a grouchy motherfucker tonight.
What did we say this time? Logan asks.
Nothing. Just...
I sigh.
Can you pour me another beer? Coming right up.
Charlie fills up my empty glass. I'm thinking of getting a dog, Logan informs us. Dogs. Okay, I can handle talking about dogs.
What kind of dog? I ask him.
Logan looks relieved that I didn't jump down his throat again, and Charlie chimes in.
Please don't tell me you're getting a lap dog like that one you had when we were in grade school.
Hey, you loved that dog. We proceed to talk about dogs while I get drunk.
Oh, God. What is that taste?
Consciousness slowly filters in as I begin to wake up. The light streaming in from my window is way too bright. My head is throbbing and my mouth tastes like some rodent shit in it. I close my eyes quickly and groan. Why did I think it was a good idea to drink so much last night? The darkness feels so much better than the light, and I throw my blankets over my face to block out the sunlight. Alas, my bladder won't let me rest for long. It's screaming at me to go to the bathroom. Each step makes my head throb worse, and I curse whoever invented alcohol. After emptying my bladder and brushing my teeth to get rid of the foul taste, I stare at myself in the mirror. I'm a complete mess. My hair is too long, my face is unshaven, and my eyes are bloodshot with dark circles underneath. Fuck. I look away, not able to stand the sight of myself. Fortunately, I'm off today. I plan to crawl right back into bed and wallow in my despair all day, but when I go to lie down, the smell of the sheets hits me. Ugh. I really need to change the sheets and do laundry. But first, coffee. The sight of the kitchen is worse than the smell of my bedroom. Shit! Why did I let this mess get so bad? I feel like getting a garbage bag and just throwing everything away so I don't have to clean it, but then I remember that I would have to replace everything and I can't afford it. Sighing, I get to work. First, I clear a path to the coffee machine and take some pain reliever to help with my headache. Then, I throw out all the takeout containers. The dishes get put in the dishwasher, and finally, I wipe the counters down. My stomach starts to grumble, but I'm not sure I can handle much more than toast. My refrigerator shows me that, in addition to being a complete slob the last week, I also forgot to go grocery shopping. Wait. Grocery shopping. Shit. I grab my phone and check the time. I am supposed to go grocery shopping for my mom today. Luckily, I have enough time to shower, strip my sheets, and start a load of laundry before I have to get to the store.
So, what's new with you?
My mom asks, studying me. What a loaded question. I'd rather not get into it right now. The wound is too fresh. I want to let it scab over before everyone starts picking at it again. Not much. How's work? I reply without meeting her eyes. We're unpacking the groceries and putting everything away in her kitchen.
Work is okay. Have you heard from Chloe?
My youngest sister has a tendency to forget to check in, and it drives my mother crazy. But instead of calling her out on it, my mom just asks me. Yes, I heard from her the other day. She seems okay. My mom smiles.
That's good. Can I fix you some lunch?
I hesitate. Staying for lunch will surely lead to more questions, but since my apartment had no food in it, I skipped breakfast and am starving.
Come on, I'll fix us some grilled cheese sandwiches. It'll only take a couple minutes, she coaxes.
Okay. Thanks, Mom. She gets to work on the stove, and the scent of the buttered bread in the pan takes me back to when I was a little boy. My mom makes the best grilled cheese sandwiches on the planet.
Tell me about your girlfriend. Are you two still taking salsa lessons?
I groan internally. Why do I tell my mom so much? I put away the last couple items and begin to set the table. We broke up, I inform her.
So that's why you look like shit.
Thanks, Mom.
Have you seen yourself?
Yeah, I know. This week has been rough. I rub the stubble on my face and run my fingers through my disheveled hair.
I bet working together makes it even harder.
Indeed. I'm ashamed to admit I've actually checked the job listings in the hospital to see if there are any interesting openings.
I'm sorry you're hurting. Want me to go beat her up?
She makes a fist and punches her hand like she's getting warmed up for a fist fight. The sight of my slender mom trying to look tough and intimidating cracks me up. She's a force to be reckoned with when she's angry, don't get me wrong. But physically, she's not very menacing. Then I realize I'm chuckling. It feels foreign on my face, this smile, and it slides off as soon as I realize it's there.
Oh, honey.
She comes over to the table and starts rubbing my shoulders.
You really like this girl, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Why did things end?
I give her the brief version of the fundraiser and how it made me feel.
Her father sounds awful.
He is.
And her mother passed away a while ago, right?
Yeah, when she was in college.
Poor thing.
Why are you feeling sorry for her? I'm the one with the broken heart. I'm her son.
Well, Max, we may not have grown up with money, but I've always wanted you and your sisters to find what makes you happy and go after it. I've never wanted you to become something you're not just for appearance's sake.
This is true. My mom never balked when I wanted to become a nurse or when Ella chose to be a graphic designer. She's never cared what anyone else thought of us as long as we were happy. I stare up at my mom, waiting for her to get to the point.
But it seems like Monica's dad is not the same way.
She grew up thinking she had to play a part for his approval. It must be a hard habit to break.
She might have a hard time shutting off the part of her that cares what other people think long enough to accept herself for who she is and what she wants. You've always had my acceptance and support. She lost the person that gave her that unconditional acceptance.
Huh. I never thought of it that way. Well, I didn't want to hide our relationship anymore, I snapped, aggravated that she seems to be taking Monica's side.
I agree with you completely, she says gently. But she might come to her senses.
If only. We finish lunch, and I help her with a few things around the house. A closet door that keeps sticking, a box on a top shelf that she can't get down, things like that. Then I take the groceries I picked up for myself and go back home. The empty apartment mocks me, but at least it's cleaner now than it was this morning. As soon as I finish putting the food away, my laptop signals that I'm getting a Skype call. Ugh. My mom likely put my sisters up to checking on me. I really don't want to answer and deal with more probing questions, but I know if I don't answer, they will just keep calling. I prop the laptop on the kitchen table, open it up, and accept the call. My sisters' faces fill the screen, each in a separate box. I fix the angle so they can see me too, although the little box with my image shows me how awful I look.
You look like shit, Ella says.
Well, hello to you too.
That's it, we're totally kicking her ass. What did she do?
Chloe says sharply. I love it that they're both coming to my defense. I'd certainly be upset if some guy hurt one of them. I hold up my hands. Nobody is kicking anyone's ass. It just didn't work out. The work thing was too big of an obstacle for us to overcome. I shrug.
Well, she's an idiot, Chloe concludes.
I try to muster a smile for them, but they see right through it. I don't need a pity party. Logan and Charlie tried that last night, but all it did was give me a hangover. Tell me about you guys. We chat a bit about little things. School, work, the incredibly high price of rent in New York City. And it does help. Their support goes a long way toward making me feel a tad less miserable. And Chloe actually gets me to crack a real smile.
Ella, did you see that? I got him to smile. Yes, mission accomplished.
I chuckle. Thanks for calling, ladies, but I'm going to go. All this smiling has me exhausted.
Bye, Max. Don't wallow in misery for too long, okay?
Ella instructs.
And tell us if we need to come down there and beat her up,
Chloe adds. Will do.
Chapter 18. Her smile is all I see. Monica. My cell pings with a text message notification. I don't want to check it, but I can't resist looking to see if it's Max. Quinn. You haven't answered my calls or responded to my texts for a week. I sigh. She's right. I've already established that I'm a coward, and I know Quinn will ream me out when she finds out what happened with Max. Honestly, I want to ream myself out. I miss him, but it's more than that. I ache for him. My life has been reduced to only work again, and it's stifling. Quinn. You better respond to this or else I'm calling the hospital to make sure you're still alive. Me. I'm alive. Quinn. Wow, a response. Was that so hard? Me. Sorry, I've been busy. Quinn. Don't bullshit me. Quinn. You're meeting me for dinner tonight. Me. Sorry, I can't. Quinn. Monica. Me. I really can't. I have a meeting. Quinn. Tomorrow, then. Me. I work. Quinn. You can't work 24 hours a day. Me. Fine. Dinner tomorrow, but can you come to my house? Quinn. Yes, I'll be there at 8 with food and alcohol. I pass the next 2 days buried in work and little else. After work, I change into baggy sweats and a t-shirt and get ready to see Quinn. As promised, my doorbell rings promptly at 8. When I open the door, I see that Quinn has her arms full. One hand is carrying a pizza box, the other a bag from the grocery store. Her purse is draped across her shoulder, and I have no idea how she made it from the car to the door without falling over. Take something quick! She thrusts the bag toward me, and I take it from her. She almost topples over once I take the bag as her balance shifts and I grab onto her to keep her from falling. Once I do, I smell her familiar perfume, peaches mixed with strawberries, and I have a hard time letting go. Soon, I'm the one clinging to her as if I may fall over. Both of us have only one free hand, but we manage to hug. I'm overcome with emotion and so grateful she's here, forcing her way in, as usual. It's like she knows when I need her and that I'm too stupid to know what I need. Hey, Monica? She asks quietly after a couple minutes. Yeah? I ask, my eyes squeezed shut, my face buried in her neck. Can we go inside yet? My arm is cramping from holding up the pizza. I laugh and pull away. Of course, sorry. We head into my kitchen, and she makes herself at home. I just sit down and let her do her thing. It takes too much energy to fight it. You need to catch me up. I didn't get much information out of Charlie the last time I saw him, but he let it slip that you and Max broke up. Imagine my surprise when I heard this from Charlie and not from you. She glares at me. Yeah, sorry about that. I've been busy. I sniff. You mean you've been burying yourself in work instead of dealing with your problems? Or that. She knows me so well. What the fuck happened? I need all the details. She pours me a margarita, complete with salt rim, and puts the pizza in the oven to keep warm. I tell her everything. At first, I have to force the words out, but then they won't stop. Caleb, my dad, having sex in the empty office, Mrs. Ramos, my dad and Dr. Finley. It sounds like a bad comedy. I describe the run-in with my dad and how I kicked him out, and I'm doing good until I get to the part where Max broke it off with me. My voice gets a bit shaky, but I ignore it and keep going. Finally, I describe the last week of working with him and how he's treated me like a stranger. Once I get to the end, she gapes at me. Say something. It's a rare feat to leave Quinn speechless. She drains her drink and pours another. I just don't know where to begin. You've really made a mess of things. Thanks a lot. I know that already. Well, you're lucky you have me. We can fix this. I'm not so sure about that. I tell her. First of all, I can't believe what you did with Caleb. You know you should have just told him from the start that you have a boyfriend. I'm amazed Max went along with it. He really loves you. Loved. Oh, my dear, you can't turn off emotions like that in 1 week. If he loved you then, he loves you still. I sigh. I'm not so sure. Do you still love him? She asks gently. Yes. Aha! I knew it. You were trying to play it off the last time we met up for dinner. Quinn, focus. I've really fucked up. Right, sorry. Well, bravo on telling your dad off. That had to feel good. It did. I admit, it also hurt, but mostly it felt good. The way you describe it, it sounds like you can fix things with Max if you come out of the closet at work. Anxiety runs through me at the thought. I don't know about that. Why do you even care about what they think? Is it worth losing Max over? She cuts right to the point. I try to put it into words. I'm just a big coward. I bury my face in my hands and envision people pointing and whispering at work, the other members of the board of directors knowing I'm sleeping with a nurse in my department. The thought of dealing with that makes my skin crawl. Then I think of this past week. No one at work knew my world has fallen apart, aside from Rossetti. No one was whispering or pointing, but Max was there, right in front of me, close enough to touch, yet so far away. No small smiles just for me, no lingering looks, no secret texts, no salsa dancing on Thursday. Being without Max is far worse than what I imagine it would be like if people at work knew about us. You are not a coward, Monica. You are fierce. You just need to want to do this, and I know you can get him back. The question is, do you want to? What if they ask me to resign? If you had a doctor in your department who approached you about dating a nurse, would you ask him or her to resign? I guess it would depend on how they conduct themselves. If they could be professional at work, I'd probably be fine with it. But I'd have to look it up in our policy and procedure manual.
You mean to tell me you haven't done this yet?
I know, you don't have to point out how I fucked up yet again. Okay, I know.
Here's what you're going to do.
She crosses her arms. Please, tell me what I should do. I need someone to tell me how to fix this.
You're going to pull up your big girl panties and set up a meeting with Dr. Finley.
Fuck. Logically, I know I have to address this with him, but I just don't want to.
In the meantime, review your policy, for fuck's sake. You may have put yourself and Max through all of this stress for nothing.
She looks at me like she wants to rip my hair out. Hell, I want to rip my hair out, too.
Yes, Mom, I reply. Monica, get out your computer right now.
Now?
What? I know you. Once I leave, you'll bury yourself under all the pillows in your bed and then drown yourself with work tomorrow. You'll procrastinate and make yourself suffer even longer than you need to.
I hardly think I'm in any condition to email Dr. Finley right now. I'm drinking. I hold up my half-filled margarita glass to remind her.
Dr. Finley, I need to talk with you. What times do you have free this week?
I think you can manage that in your state of extreme drunkenness.
I guess you're right, I grumble. She follows me into my bedroom and stands over my shoulder as I type out the message. Spellcheck tells me I haven't made any errors, and Quinn reads it through before I hit send. Correction, she hits send for me. Then, we eat pizza and drink more margaritas as she tells me what she thinks I should do.
If I were you, I would make a big production out of asking him out at work.
Do you know me at all?
I am not cut out for big scenes anywhere, least of all work.
Well, that's what his biggest problem is, you hiding your relationship at work. If you let the cat out of the bag with a bang, then he won't have any doubts about how serious you are. You can't tell him you're ready to go public at work and do nothing.
She has a point, but still, the thought of doing something like that at work makes me want to vomit. What would I even do, ask him out over the PA system? That would be stupid, right?
Then I think of Max. How would he react if I did something like that? He would be shocked.
He would love it. I sigh. Keep talking.
Max. I pull up outside Safe Zone and park, feeling a bit anxious. Can I do this? Simone emailed me last week and asked me about doing some activities with the kids as we discussed at the fundraiser. I balked at first, not wanting to do anything that might scare the children, but she reassured me that I wouldn't be the only adult there, and we could start with something simple, like decorating the parking lot with sidewalk chalk. I am not the best artist, but Simone said the kids love doing it and won't care if I'm good, just that I'm present. Tate told me she would be participating too, so I felt better knowing she would be there to tell me if I did something stupid.
Hey, Max, Tate greets.
It's Wednesday at 4 p.m., and I'm surprised how many of the offices are bustling with activity. The last time I was here was the Saturday I volunteered with Monica, and this hall was pretty quiet that day. Hey, it looks really busy here. You sure you have time to do this with me?
It's no problem. Let me just finish up here, and I'll go round up the kids. Have a seat.
She motions to the chair in her office. I sit down and watch as she types furiously at her computer. She glances up at me, then to her office door as we hear chatter in the hall.
Thank you so much for coming on short notice,
I hear Simone saying to someone. Then a familiar voice says,
It's no problem at all. I was happy to stop by. It looks really busy here today.
My eyes fly up to Tate. You didn't tell me Monica would be here.
Sorry, I didn't know. She isn't scheduled to be here until next Saturday.
She holds up her hands apologetically. The footsteps get closer, and then I see her. She glances into Tate's office as she passes, and her eyes land on me. For a second, she smiles, as if happy to see me, and those hazel eyes touch my face with their power. Then she remembers that we've broken up, and she schools her expression, though her feet do stop moving. I stand up as Simone enters the office.
Hi, Max. Thanks so much for coming by today.
What are you doing here, Max? Monica asks.
He's going to play with the kids this afternoon. I'm starting a program for the kids to get to spend time with men in a healthy way. I thought Max would be perfect. The kids that met him at the clinic really liked him, especially Lucy.
Monica can't help the smile that spreads across her face, though I see her try.
She is so beautiful, it hurts.
She turns to look at me, and I bask in the fact that she is directing that smile at me.
I couldn't agree more.
My chest squeezes with emotion. It means so much to me that she likes this idea. It's not that I was doing it for her approval, I didn't even know she would be here, but it means a lot to me that she thinks I'm a good choice. We're just going to play with sidewalk chalk. How hard could it be? I shrug and give her a small smile. Lucy and her mom Samantha appear in the hall too, and Lucy looks so much better than the last time I saw her. Her bruises are gone, and I see that the cut has healed for the most part, though one section is a bit red and has some steri-strips on it. Big brown eyes look up at me, sparkling, and she gives me a small, shy smile. She's clutching her mom's leg with her right arm, and I notice she clutches coconut in her left. I'm a bit nervous to talk to her, but she sees me and doesn't cower away, like she did the last time. I crouch down to her level. Hi, Lucy. Do you remember me?
You're Max.
I smile at her and nod. Are you ready to teach me how to draw with sidewalk chalk?
Me teach you?
Her eyes get wide. Yep. I've never played with sidewalk chalk before, I admit.
You haven't?
She's shocked. I shake my head. Nope.
It's easy, you'll see. I'm going to draw a coconut.
She holds up the stuffed animal. I laugh. Wow, I don't know if I can make something that complicated. I thought I'd start off with something easy like the sun. How hard can that be, right? Even I can make a big yellow circle. Everyone chuckles at my ambition.
Dr. Morgan, are you going to play with us too?
Lucy looks up at Monica.
Oh, honey, I don't think Dr. Morgan is here for that. She stopped by to check your face, but she has to go back to work now,
Samantha explains, running her fingers through her daughter's hair.
But, Dr. Morgan, you and Max were a team last time you were here. I thought you would work as a team today, too.
This sweet little girl might make me cry. We were a team. What I wouldn't give to be on Monica's team again. Just me and her, working, laughing, living. The room has gone silent, and I watch Monica process this. She looks at me and actually shows me how she feels. I see longing in her eyes, longing and regret. I want to pull her into my arms so badly right now. You don't have to stay, I tell her quietly, though in my mind I think, please stay. I want to spend more time with you, even if it's playing with sidewalk chalk with a bunch of kids.
Please, Dr. Morgan,
Lucy pleads with big puppy dog eyes.
You know what? I'd love to stay and play with you guys.
She smiles down at Lucy. After Tate makes the rounds, 8 kids end up joining her, Monica, and me in the parking lot. Some moms linger at a nearby picnic table, some choose to participate. We make the parking lot so colorful, and the kids love it. Rainbows, flowers, suns, stars, lightning bolts, and some unidentifiable objects decorate various sections of the asphalt. Then Lucy decides she wants to trace me. She has me lie down on the ground and traces all around my body. Then another little boy wants to do the same thing. Soon enough, all the adults are instructed to lie down while the little ones trace their outlines in chalk. Monica is instructed by Lucy to lie down right next to me, and I'm beginning to feel like Lucy knows I'm desperate to spend more time with Monica and is on my side. I can't help but look over at her while Lucy gets to work. Chalk is on her face and all over her black pants, and the sunlight picks up different shades of brown in her hair. She closes her eyes as she lies back and smiles at something Lucy says to her. My insides ache for her to be mine again. She must feel my stare because she opens her eyes and meets my gaze. After a beat, she smiles at me. I feel a spark of hope light up inside me. Hope that she still loves me, that she wants everything with me just like I want everything with her. I want to kill this feeling of hope. I want to stomp it out. Because I can't think she wants me back, only to be disappointed. It would hurt so bad for her to tell me she wants me and then hide me away again. I close my eyes so I don't have to see how beautiful she is. But it's no use. Even with my eyes closed, her smile is all I see.
Chapter 19. It's Max. Monica. My thoughts are racing and bouncing all over the place. I imagine telling him everything. I would tell him so many things. I have a meeting scheduled with Dr. Finley tomorrow, and even though I'm scared shitless, I'm ready to fight for us. Quinn and I concocted a stupid plan for me to prove to you that I don't care what anyone thinks about us being together. I miss you. I love you. I want everything with you. Do you still want everything with me? I can't bear to be apart from him now that I've decided I will do anything I can to get him back. Seeing him here at Safe Zone, letting little kids climb all over him with chalk, makes me love him even more. Lucy pulls him up from lying on the ground and shows him his shape outlined in blue chalk. He laughs at something she says, and the sound of his laughter makes me shiver. He's so gorgeous and kind. And God, he's so sexy. How does he make a t-shirt and athletic pants look so good? He looks over and catches me staring at him. I can't help but smile. Then Lucy pulls me up and tells me to look at what she's drawn. I see Max's shape right next to mine. The outlines of bodies on the ground kind of look like we're at a crime scene, except I love the way our shapes look right next to each other. Once we are done with playtime, Tate and the moms usher the kids back inside and we clean up. I see that most of the pieces of chalk have been worn down to little nubs and make a mental note to buy some more. Simone was right. The kids loved it. We bring the supplies back inside and Tate shows us to the staff room so we can wash our hands. That went well, Tate says. It was easier than I thought, Max tells her. Are you on for next week? I thought we might play board games. Count me in, he confirms. What about you, Monica? Tate asks innocently. Isn't this about the kids spending more time with men? It is, but feel free to join us. It seemed like you were having fun today. I had a great time. They are amazing kids. She gives me a sad smile. Yes, they are. She puts the containers of chalk away. I have to finish up a few things before I can go. I'll see you guys later. She gives us each a brief hug and waves goodbye. Then it's just me and Max. The air seems to thicken, and I'm hyper aware of how close we're standing. I get a damp paper towel and do my best to brush the chalk off my black pants, but it's futile to try to get it all. That was definitely messier than I thought it would be, I remark. He chuckles. You have a bit right here. He points to his cheek. I swipe at my cheek, embarrassed that I had no idea there was chalk on my face. Did I get it? Not quite. He points up a bit higher. I broaden the area I'm trying to swipe, wishing I had a mirror. Here, let me. He steps into my personal space, takes the paper towel from me, and gently wipes my skin. I freeze, looking up into his amazingly blue eyes. This is the first time he's touched me in 10 days, and even though it's only with a paper towel and it's only to wipe chalk off me, I'm having a hard time breathing. I want him to keep touching me. He studies my face, and after wiping the spot on my cheek, he trails his finger down the side of my face. Please, kiss me. I need you. I miss you. There. All gone. He steps away. Disappointment courses through me, and I bring my hand up to touch the spot he just touched. Max, I'm going to tell him everything right now. But he doesn't give me a chance, saying, I'm going to head out. He turns and heads for the door. Can I walk with you? I need more time with him. Okay, he says, unsure.
He waits by the exit as I get my purse from Tate's office. Then we step into the parking lot and walk toward my car. I take slow steps so I can find my courage and my words. But the silence is tense and awkward between us. My thoughts turn into a traffic jam, no one particular thing making its way to my mouth. We reach my car in what seems like seconds, and I've run out of time. "Have a good night," he says as I unlock my car with the key fob. "Max, wait." I can't let him walk away from me. He stops, but doesn't turn back around to face me. "Are you working tomorrow?" "Please turn around. Please tell me you miss me as much as I miss you." "Yes," he answers and continues to walk away. "See you then." Fuck. He's slipping away and I'm losing my nerve, but maybe it's better this way. I'll just talk with him tomorrow when I can tell him that I've met with Dr. Finley. "Okay. See you tomorrow." "It's better this way," I repeat to myself. I just wish I could have told him everything tonight. "This is it," I think as I get ready to head into work. I'm finally going to get some answers. I reviewed the company's policy on dating coworkers, but it was very vague and nothing dealt with doctors and nurses or directors and the employees under them in specific. I really need to just suck it up and talk with Dr. Finley. He was only available today, which happened to be my day off, but that's okay. I'm glad I don't have to see patients before or after talking to him. I'm a nervous wreck, as it is. I towel off my hair and grab my phone to check the time. I need to be there at 9 a.m., and I want to give myself plenty of time to get there. My bladder tends to get nervous right along with me, and I always have to pee when I get like this, so I want to build in some time for bathroom stops. As I wake up my phone, I see 8 missed calls. Huh. I was only in the shower for 15, maybe 20 minutes, and usually no one ever calls me. That's strange. I click on the missed calls notification to see who called. There are several from a back line at the ER, and then the last 4 are from Tony Rossetti. Why is work calling me? I'm not scheduled to be at work today. My stomach sinks. I'm about to listen to the voicemail when the phone starts to ring in my hand. Tony Rossetti's name flashes across my screen. Dread crawls across my skin as I swipe the green bar to answer the call. "Hello?" "Oh, thank God you answered. I've been trying to get a hold of you." His voice is all business. "Sorry, I was in the shower. What's going on, Tony?" "I know you're not scheduled to be here today, but are you able to come in?" His voice sounds strained. "I'm actually headed there for a meeting. I'm supposed to be there at 9. What's going on?" I repeat the question. "It's Max." My heart stops. "What about Max?" "He just got here in an ambulance. It looks like he was riding his bike and was hit by an SUV," he tells me, his voice grave. No. No. No, no. No, no. This can't be happening. Panic paralyzes me, and my ears begin to ring. I notice a faint buzzing sound in the edge of my awareness, then realize Tony is still talking to me. "He's unconscious and they're prepping him for surgery. We just called his mother, but I wanted to let you know." The words float around just outside my comprehension. It's Max, riding his bike, hit by an SUV, unconscious. Surgery. This can't be happening. "Monica?" Tony's voice rises on the other end. "Yes." I barely get out. "Listen to me. We're doing everything we can. Just be safe and get here soon, okay?" With that, he hangs up. Chapter 20. The thing is, I love him. Monica. When I got the call that my mom had been in an accident, I was 19 years old, and Quinn helped me get home. I have no recollection of getting on a plane, traveling from Ohio to Illinois, or waiting for someone to come find me in the ER waiting room. My dad worked at the hospital she was in, so he was already in the back, not directing her care, but one of the staff. Quinn sat with me in the private waiting room they had for families with my mom's parents. I remember sitting there, unable to comprehend that she might die. She had just left me a voicemail that same day, and I kept playing it over and over again. How could a life end so quickly, especially one with so much life left to live? As an ER doctor, I always thought I would be the best person to take care of a loved one in an emergency. I mean, I take care of random strangers all the time. It's my job. If I can take care of people who mean nothing to me, of course I would be able to take care of people who mean everything to me. But it doesn't work that way. It turns out, when Max is in critical condition as a result of being hit by an SUV, I am a useless pile of shit. After hanging up with Tony, I knew driving was beyond my ability, so I called Quinn, and she came to my rescue once again. She picked me up, took the towel off my head, I forgot it was even there, brushed my hair, grabbed me some clothes, I was still in my robe, and walked me to her car. I don't remember the ride here. When we arrive, the mood is somber. Scared eyes greet me at the front desk. Quinn holds my hand as we walk through the patient assessment rooms and down the hall to the emergency operating room. The hall is crowded with people. Kevin, Julie, and Tony stand in front of the window that looks into the room. Paramedics linger in the hall, even though their job is done. Max is well-liked in the ER, and everyone seems to be holding their breath, unable to look away from the room where he lies unconscious. My feet are stuck to the floor. I can't move them, so afraid of seeing Max lying in a bed, lifeless. Tony catches sight of me and Quinn and comes over to us. I know the look on his face. I've seen that look when he delivers bad news to a patient's family members. He stands in front of me, hesitating. "Tell me," I croak. "Internal bleeding, broken ribs, punctured lung, brain swelling." As he lists the injuries, each one hits me like a physical blow, and I almost stagger back. Any of these injuries would be grave on their own, but together, it's devastating. Tears fall down my face. Maybe they've been falling down my face the whole time, I'm not sure. Tony hugs me. His tall body leans down, and he smashes me against his big belly.
"Monica, we have a great surgical team, you know that. Max is young and strong. He will pull through this."
I sob uncontrollably into his chest, ugly, disgusting noises erupting from my throat. He pats me gruffly. Then I feel another hand on my shoulder and another hand on my back. I turn to see my staff surround me, tears in their eyes. "You guys," I huff, my voice squeaky with my tears. "Who is taking care of him?"
"Surgery started about 10 minutes ago,"
Tony informs me. "Who's doing the surgery?"
"Dylan Thomas and Harper Williams."
"They're excellent surgeons." I nod, wiping the snot off my face. "Where is Max's mom?" Quinn asks. My eyes widen at the realization that Max's mom is here. I forgot all about her.
"She's in the private waiting room. Want me to take you to her?"
"Yes." Max's mom is a tall, slender woman with chin-length black hair and piercing blue eyes. Her face is blotchy from crying, and she's shredding apart the tissue in her hands when we walk in. I'm surprised to see she isn't alone. Charlie, Logan, and Tate are also in the small waiting room. I look at Quinn. "I texted Charlie after you called me," Quinn answers before I can ask the question. I forgot she knows Charlie. That night in the bar seems like it happened in a different lifetime. They all stand up when we enter the room and look at me expectantly, as if I'm the doctor, there to give them an update. But I'm not here as a doctor. I'm here to wait with them. Tate approaches me first, hugging me tightly. Then Logan and Charlie take turns. "This is Max's mom, Brooke Spencer." Tate introduces her to me. We fall against each other in a tight hug,
Sobs erupt from both of us, and we cling to each other. Once we calm down a bit, she pulls back to look at me. I must look disgusting. It's nice to meet you, Monica. She gives me a watery smile. Hi, Miss Spencer. Call me Brooke. We sit together, waiting and praying. I can't bear the thought of observing Max's surgery. I need to be surrounded with people that love him the most. Minutes turn into hours. 1 hour turns into two. The wait is excruciating, but at least Tony updates us regularly. The first while passes in silence. Then, Charlie chatters on about his latest job. He asks about Chloe and Ella, who are both on their way here. Ella was able to book a last-minute flight from New York, and Chloe is driving up from college, which is 2 hours away. The thought of them dropping everything to travel here for Max brings me back to my mom's accident. I shiver at the thought, hoping like hell that their trip has a different conclusion than mine did. Quinn squeezes my hand, understanding the turn in my thoughts. Logan leaves to get food, though none of us eat much. Chloe arrives at the 3-hour mark. She is beautiful, with Max's blue eyes and her mother's tall, slim frame. Her hair is long, though, inky black and shiny. Everyone hugs her and cries all over again when she arrives. Ella walks in not even 20 minutes later, and she gets the same tearful greeting. The two could be twins, only Ella's hair is slightly shorter. The girls dote on their mother, holding her hand and comforting her. The tears come and go. There are periods of time Brooke gets so scared and angry that she can't stop the tears from falling. When she falls apart, her daughters surround her and hug her. Even Charlie and Logan do their best to comfort her, and I can tell they know her well. Then, there are periods of time when the choking fear loosens its grip on us, and everyone chats about the most mundane topics to pass the time. It's during one of these times that Ella eyes me curiously. Why are you here, Monica? The last I heard, you and Max had broken up. It's a fair question. I look to Quinn for help, eyes wide, emotion clogging my throat. She shrugs, telling me I'm on my own. I find all eyes on me, waiting for my answer. I was a stupid idiot, I admit, my chin quivering. Agreed, Chloe says without hesitation. I was planning to get him back, I confess, hating myself for not telling him last night. What if I never get to tell him? What if he never knows I was going to fight for us? Tears pool in my eyes, and I wring my hands together. I hope I'm not too late. Why should he take you back? Ella asks. Her mom admonishes her for being blunt, but I wave her concern away. The fact that Max's sisters are so protective of him only makes me like them more. I deserve some interrogation after hurting their brother. Because I love him. I believe he still loves me, too. He's the best thing that ever happened to me, I tell them through my tears. I told him you'd come to your senses. Brooke smiles tremulously. The tears fall from my eyes as I let out a short laugh. I'm amazed I can still produce more tears. You did? I ask her. I did, just the other day. I had a feeling you'd come around. My Max is a good man. You'd have a hard time finding anyone better than him. I clutch her hand and nod in agreement, too choked up to talk. Max's sisters and mom hug me as I cry. At least now we don't have to kick your ass, Chloe tells me. We laugh, and then they tell me funny stories about him. Charlie and Logan chime in, and we manage to laugh together. Chloe catches everyone up on her classes, and Ella tells us about her apartment and job. We all listen until the next emotional meltdown. I know surgery takes a long time, Logically, I realize they had a lot to fix. But after 4 hours, my mind starts going crazy with anxiety. I come up with every complication listed in the textbooks. Blood clot, stroke, pulmonary embolism. My brain catalogs them all, convinced something must have gone wrong for the surgery to take this long. Ignorance is bliss, but even though no one else in this room knows all the things that can go wrong quite as well as I do, everyone is getting anxious, shifting in their chairs, looking at the clock every 30 seconds. I'm on the verge of walking in the back and demanding answers when the surgeon walks in the waiting room. Breathing a sigh of relief, I stand up to greet him, along with everyone else. Brooke, Ella, and Chloe huddle around me to get the update. I try to read his expression, but all I see is fatigue. Dylan, how is he? Dylan looks at all of us in the eyes, and it occurs to me how comforting that one small gesture is. He made it through surgery. Everyone breathes a sigh of relief. We were able to stop the bleeding in his abdomen, repair his cracked ribs, and reinflate his lung. Luckily, there was no active bleeding in the brain, only mild swelling, so we avoided surgery there. He's sedated and hooked up to a ventilator. Brooke looks overwhelmed by all of this information.